We'll get into some of these playoff games here over the weekend, non-Texans, in just a second. In particular, that Eagles game, which was quite the spectacle yesterday at the end of the game.
Amazing.
Poor Cody Parkey getting the Steve Bartman treatment, I think, in Chicago probably after that double doink field goal. Couple tweets I wanted to read, Rich, sure. and just get thoughts on this. High-voltage Texan tweets. What this goes back to a couple segments ago when we were talking about this is the first time that Deshaun Watson is going to experience scrutiny of failures during the offseason,
yeah,
heading into
sure.
a season. High Voltage Texan says, Watson experienced failure with that loss to Alabama in the 2016 National Championship game.
He was spectacular in that game.
Exactly. And my reply to him, and I'm reading the tweet because I think there's probably other people. If there's one person thinking that, others probably are as well. Yeah. That was his coming out party. I know it was in a loss.
No.
But he was great in that game.
And he was bad on Saturday. He's never been this bad in this big a moment.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's the first time he's experienced a loss. I'm saying this is the first time he's experienced, heading into the offseason, a loss that's going to be viewed as, I'm not going to say largely, but more than his fair share of blame on that on what went down on Saturday.
And again,
he missed some big throws.
Again, not just Watson, but the Texans as a whole, it's not just that they lost. Just like that, the reverse of this is that loss to Alabama that he referenced. It's not just that they lost. It's how they went down. And they went down with a whimper on Saturday. He went down with a bang in that loss to Alabama.
Yep. This tweet talking about Colvin, Aaron Colvin. How was Colvin a bust when he was hurt pretty much the entire season? Dude practically shut Hogan down with no catches week one. He was playing the Edelman role. Hogan was. This is from Texans Naren, by the way. Not to mention making a game-saving pass breakup versus the Jets when he returned. This is why he's a bust. Okay, this is why this season was a bust.
I know where you're going.
I'm not willing to bury him yet. It's a playoff game, and he's inactive.
Why is he not? And
he's a healthy scratch behind Sharice Wright and something called Deontay Burton.
Right. Healthy scratch is the key term. And there was at least one game down the stretch where he played one snap and it was on special teams.
Yeah.
I mean, he was out of the rotation. And if you're active, well, you're not hurt enough not to be able to play. If you're active, you're available. And there were many times he was active in the second half of the season where he was not an option. He became not an option when he was healthy. That's a problem.
He's probably the one red X mark on the report card for Brian Gaine in year one as general manager for this team.
Yeah.
I think most of his free agency moves, you know, the two guards, Fulton and Kelemete, those aren't cap breaking type of signings. They were okay as just sort of stopgap guards for you. He did well in the draft without a first and second round pick. I liked some of the street guys he brought in. You know, he got a lot out of guys. DeAndre Carter was a guy you signed off the waiver wire in week eight. He was your number two receiver by the end of the year because of all the injuries. Colvin was a failure this year. He got $18 million guaranteed. He couldn't get on the field in the most important games of the year. O'Brien was asked about Aaron Colvin at his press conference yesterday.
Aaron worked very hard. He's a good guy. He worked hard. He was injured in the first Colts game, and I think that was a tough injury. Not to make an excuse for him, but tough one to come back from. You know, it was an ankle injury, and I'm not sure that he ever fully recovered from it. I don't want to speak for him, but we just felt like at the end of the day, you know, we went with the 46 guys that we felt were the healthiest and the most ready to go.
When you think about this secondary, Rich, and make no mistake, this secondary needs an upgrade of some sort this offseason to go against the teams they're going to face in 2019. But when you think about back in July, when we were in West Virginia back in July, and you're thinking about what the starting secondary is going to look like for this team.
Pretty good back then.
Well, you were optimistic. You know, Kevin Johnson was coming back, and depending on how much Kool-Aid you were drinking about Kevin Johnson returning to form from his first 2 years in the league and not his third year in the league. The bottom line is this team was going to be counting heavily on Kevin Johnson and Aaron Colvin to hold that secondary together. They got almost nothing out of either guy. They got next to nothing out of Kevin Johnson. He played in one game, and in that game, he got shouted down by the Honey Badger on the sidelines for being out of position on a touchdown. Colvin, you got a little bit more out of, but the bottom line is when you needed the guy, he was inactive. He wasn't playing at a level where you could put him on the field and feel good about him.
Right. Exactly. So, and maybe the ankle was a factor, but again, there were games where he was active. And to me, when you're active, the injury is not an excuse.
Yeah. Which of the three games non-Texan did you enjoy the most this weekend, Rich?
Which of the three?
Yeah.
Well, probably the only one I got right.
Which was?
Chargers Ravens.
Okay. So yeah, so it's all about you, basically.
Well, yeah. I mean, we'll begin with me. But probably Eagles Bears was also very, very entertaining.
I think that's the one with the best storylines
in
the whole
thing. Yes, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. The double doink field goal.
That was as much fun as any of the games
were. Upright and crossbar. Yeah, I'm having to do my CBS show while it's on, so it was good practice for Super Bowl Sunday for me.
Right. Well, let me just say one thing as we get into this. Is it Cody Parker?
Cody Parkey.
Cody Parkey, excuse me. Yeah, I mean, it's been a habitual problem for him, especially in his home stadium, that he hits the uprights. That's well documented. So
that's part of my all due respect. So don't go too far down that. Yeah,
I mean, it's obviously a huge failure. With all due respect, he screwed up big time. But nobody's talking about this. Trayvon Hester got a piece of that football.
Yes.
Go back and look.
It was tipped.
Go back and, yes, that ball was clearly tipped at the line of scrimmage. The trajectory of that football clearly affected by that tip. And on an attempt that was decided by a couple of inches hitting that upright and then the crossbar, I don't think it's unreasonable to think that had that ball not been tipped at the line of scrimmage, Parkey is a hero today in Chicago.
But how crazy is it, Rich, to think? I mean, honestly, when you think of careers, hell, lives, being changed by a ball glancing off of a finger. And think about the...
And it got there, so it was barely a glance off the finger.
So, but think about the tightrope. Think about the tightrope that the Eagles have walked this season since the last month of the season. First of all, I think you could argue that if Wentz doesn't get hurt and Nick Foles doesn't come in, they just might finish the season like 7-9 or 8-8. There's some magic about Nick Foles late in the season with these Eagles that's undeniable. We saw him win a Super Bowl MVP last year, and now he's on his way as a sixth seed to go play the Saints. But I think back to, this is something we can talk about with very acute knowledge of, because they played the Texans in Week 17. Their playoff hopes, Rich, were sitting on a 3rd and 10 at their own 10-yard line in the last minute of that game after the Texans had just taken a lead. Nick Foles completes a pass to Alshon Jeffrey. Jadeveon Clowney puts a helmet in Nick Foles' sternum, gets called for a 15-yard penalty. Yada, yada, yada. Next thing you know, four plays later, they're kicking a field goal just to stay alive. And it really is. That's, to me, what makes football the best of all these sports postseason-wise. The scarcity of games in the regular season, there's only 16 of them. The fact that the tournament, quote-unquote, is a one-and-done is that a play like that does change entire seasons and careers for people. Whereas in basketball and baseball, over 162 or an 82-game season and 7-game playoffs, these things tend to get weeded out. Yeah, you can win a game here or there, but ultimately the cream rises to the top in those sports, by and large.
If we're going to call this the Elite Eight of the NFL, the most compelling story is the Eagles. Colts are probably number two. Behind them, coming from
the two-six seeds.
Yeah, coming from where they originated. They're an incredible story, and there's something about Foles, it's undeniable. And it appears, look, I mean, we saw it under Chip Kelly way back when in Philadelphia, and then we didn't see a whole lot of it earlier this season when Wentz wasn't ready. But in last year's stretch run in playoffs and this year in the same period of time, he's been nothing short of special. And his numbers weren't spectacular yesterday. And they didn't run the football very well yesterday. But when the game was on the line, if you've got the game recorded, go back and look at those last couple of possessions by the Eagles. Because the Bears routinely, when Foles would drop back to pass, would rush three, sometimes only two or four. And look, numbers are numbers. When you rush three and the quarterback is dropping back, you've got eight that have dropped. You've got nine that have dropped when you're only rushing two. So Foles was dealing with four targets versus eight defenders dropped, five targets versus nine defenders dropped, whatever the numbers were, and he kept finding a way to get it done. There was a crowd of Bears defenders in the secondary and in the middle zone of the defense many, many times in the fourth quarter, and many, many times Foles thread the needle and made a fantastic throw.
Yeah, you think about that, and when you say that, Rich, I go, well, that's how I would have defended Nick Foles like 3 years ago, for sure, when he was... before he became, you know, big bleep Nick that he is now.
Yep.
But now, you know, he's been really good at protecting the football. He actually wasn't good at protecting the football yesterday. He threw a couple of them away. But this Eagles team is just, they find a way, man. They find a way to get things done. And that's got to be, it's got to be fun to root for a team like that that finds a way to get stuff done like that. And they're doing it this, like, they're going to have to do it on the road, unlike last year,
yeah,
where
that's right.
We go, okay.
They're a true underdog this time.
Right. Like the main thing they had going last year, when you and I are sitting here talking about the Eagles last year going into the playoffs, I know the things that I was saying, Rich, and you know me. I've not been a big Nick Foles guy. I've come around on, it's hard not to come around on him. The guy won a Super Bowl, and now look what he's doing. Now you're, to use your phrase, you're spitting into the wind if you're trying to downgrade Nick Foles at this point. We'll let that happen when the Jacksonville Jaguars sign him next year and he turns back into the other Nick Foles. But the last year at this time, you and I are sitting here going, boy, thank God for them that Carson Wentz got them a good enough record to where they could secure the one seed, because now Nick Foles, right. You know who else was saying
Wentz
that?
Wentz was an MVP candidate.
Rich, the odds makers made the Eagles underdogs in each of their playoff games before the Super Bowl last year. They were underdogs against the Falcons.
As the number one seed.
In the division round as the number one seed, and they were certainly underdogs against the Minnesota Vikings.
They're a huge underdog in the Big Easy on Sunday.
And they should be. Look, they lost 48-7 to them not all that long ago.
They did.
It was 8.5. It opened at 8.5. When it opened yesterday during my show last night, I said on the air, on my CBS show, that line's going to go up.
It's 9 today,
I think. Because people are going to look at that. They're going to go, "This." I get it. But it's Drew Brees against Nick Foles. To me, I've said this before too, of all the entities in the postseason, we'll call it, whether it's a person, a player, a coach, whatever, after about the first 5 or 6 quarterbacks, to me, if I were drafting things or people, I would draft the home field advantage of the Superdome. Yeah. That's one of the things I would want ahead of half the quarterbacks and maybe most of the head coaches.
It's the best home field advantage in the NFL.
It is.
It's the loudest building in the NFL, and they're going to be hard-pressed, obviously, to beat Drew Brees and company.
Who do you think the Saints would rather be facing right now? Because they could have faced either the Cowboys or the Eagles.
The Cowboys.
Yeah, you think they'd... Yeah.
I do.
Now they just lost.
Cowboys might have been a less... the number might be lower if the Cowboys were visiting New Orleans.
Well, the Cowboys just beat the Saints. The only team the Saints have lost to in the last couple months is the Cowboys.
That's not going
to
be a 9-point spread, but no. I still think they would prefer the Cowboys over the Eagles.
I do, too.
The Eagles just have something going on right now.
They're a zombie.
That's an intangible thing.
They're a zombie.
By the way, did you catch the Long Brothers exchange at the end of the game?
I did not.
Felt so bad for Kyle Long. After Parkey missed that field goal,
Kyle Long's an O-lineman for the Bears, and his brother Chris Long is a D-lineman for the Eagles. Right. They're the sons of Howie Long.
Right, and Chris Long is, of course, has won the last 2 Super Bowls.
Right.
With the Patriots and the Eagles.
It's pretty good.
And then they hugged, and they've talked about how they're so close, and you could tell that Chris Long was feeling for Kyle Long. He didn't want to let go. He wanted to keep hugging him because then they separated and started talking to other people. And Chris Long kept looking back at Kyle Long, and the look The look on his face was half, "Dude, I'm so sorry," and half, "Are you really okay?
Yeah,
I want to make sure you're okay." And there was legitimate concern on his face.
And meanwhile, Cody Parkey's walking into the other tunnel, and he's getting booed like a WWE heel.
Cody Parkey left the field, and as he was leaving the field, he put his helmet back on, and I said out loud, "I'd put that helmet on too, dude."
Oh, there was at least a few C-size batteries in that crowd. You know there had to be,
No doubt.